Well, let's welcome you back to This Week in the Association. I'm Ron Pinier, joined once again by my good buddy Kevin Lucco. And this week, Kevin and I are honored to welcome the new broadcaster for the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, Doug Greenwald. Doug, thanks for joining us this week.
Rob and Kevin, thank you. Hard to believe baseball season's almost here.
I know, it is pretty crazy. But Doug, let's first of all talk about how did you feel Winnipeg was a good fit for you?
Well, I've heard a lot of great things about the organization, and there's been consistency in that organization for 30 years. And while I admit I've never stepped foot in the province of Manitoba, let alone the city of Winnipeg, I certainly have known of the Gold Eyes. My roots are indie ball. I follow independent league baseball and know that there have only been two broadcasters there in that span, which obviously is good, and the administration has been the same with owner Sam Cates and general manager Andrew Collier for years and years. And it's from what I've been told, even though I've not shaken hands with anybody yet, it's been a consistent, it's probably been the most consistent of the independent league, or I should say now MLB partner league teams for the last 30 years. It's the thing to do up there. And while a lot of teams understandably have gone internet only for their broadcasts, and we get it with costs and all that, and that's the thing it is now with iPhones and such, they've been consistently on a radio station. So I think all around it seemed to be a good fit with what I just mentioned.
Well, tell us a little bit about how you got into broadcasting in the first place.
Well, my father was a big league broadcaster with the Giants and Yankees and A's for 20 seasons. And my father, Hank Greenwald, and I always say to people that I haven't known life any other way. I started going to the ballpark, a big league ballpark, since age five. And I grew up watching Dad do what he did. And that was going to a broadcast booth. That was travel with a big league team. That was prepare for a broadcast. Back in the days before the internet, when you read newspapers and read the Baseball Digest to prepare for broadcast, let alone obviously talking to players, scouts, and other broadcasters. But that's been my life. It's been around the ballpark, and really haven't known life to be any other fabric.
Isn't that amazing? There was once a baseball world without Twitter and the internet, and we actually did have to read newspapers. And I remember getting Baseball Digest. That was must read every time it came out.
It is amazing to think in the last 25 years that we are dependent on everything with internet, Twitter, but I love it. I mean, Twitter is a great tool because it reaches, whether it be the Australian Baseball League or MLB partner leagues or any major league team, and just it's great broadcast stuff. It's great broadcast material because you might read something mid-afternoon and there could be a game and, so-and-so hits three home runs in a Midwest League game. You might use that note on the air that night. So it really does help MLB Network. I mean, all these cable channels now, because when I was growing up watching my dad prepare, I mean, we'd watch the 10 o'clock news. That was our idea of the internet back then. My take is, yeah, the internet is the Twitter and all the social media. Say what you want, and everyone has their opinion about it, but I think it helps immensely for a broadcast. And not only that, but also XM radio, because we didn't have that back in the day when my dad was doing games where you hoped you could pick up another game late at night on a transistor radio. Now you don't have to worry about that. And people ask how I prepare for games. I love going to the ballpark, mid-afternoon. I might drive to the ballpark, and I'll have a major league game on or a minor league baseball game on, and I might take some notes from that and apply it to the broadcast. So it's all sorts of ways to prepare now.
You have had a very impressive career, Doug. So tell for fans out there wanting to learn a little bit about you, how did your start in baseball and broadcasting get underway and some of the teams that you broadcasted for over the years?
Well, it started in Bend, Oregon in 1996. In a way, I'm going back to my independent league roots after years and years in organized ball. The Bend Bandits were part of the renaissance of what was then called strictly independent league baseball up in Oregon. And I was in the Western Baseball League, which had teams in Washington and Southern California and a few in Northern California. and I guess you could say got, you know, how they say timing's everything or luck of the cards. I was in the computer lab at Boston University. It was my senior year, and I back in the old days of the AP wire, the internet was just getting going then, so we didn't have broadcast websites. And I remember on the AP wire, there was under the transactions that Mike Curto, who's been the longtime voice of the Tacoma Rainiers, had just accepted the job with Rancho Cucamonga. Well, Mike had been in Bend a year before, and Mike and I both had interned with the San Francisco Giants, and but we really both wanted to get into broadcasting. So I immediately called Mike, who was working at the Giants. It was, I guess it was still the offseason, and Mike said to me, "Doug," I said, "how do you know that already?" You know, I told him I saw on the AP wire. He says, "I just got off the phone with Rancho 20 minutes ago, and they've already posted it." I said, "Well, yeah, they have." He goes, "Well, Ben's open, and here's the owner's name, and give him a call." And a gentleman by the name of Ed Shaw is his name. I still talk to Ed to this day. And I called Ed, and Ed said, "Yep, we're open. So send your stuff," and it went from there. Minor League Baseball is about, much like the players, it's about looking to move up and develop. And, you know, I've been around, Fresno, I was there for 20 years, and I really felt I developed as a broadcaster there. It helped lead me to some opportunities with the Giants. Like players, you bounce around a little bit, whether it be Burlington, Iowa with the Bees or in the Midwest League. And then I ended up back in independent league ball in a place called Lafayette, Louisiana, an independent league team called the Bayou Bullfrogs, which I lasted 1 year there. The team lasted 3 years, but that was a great deal of fun. And that might have been really one of my, if not favorite stops. I mean, Fresno was certainly a favorite stop in terms of development, but in terms of working with a team from the ground up in Lafayette, it was a new team, new pro team. And literally walked in January. Season started in May, and we didn't even have desks or chairs. Phones were on cardboard boxes. We'd sit on little stools and make sales calls, and then it took about a week before the carpet got put in and desks and chairs arrived. Stockton Ports, I worked there. I worked with the Modesto A's, and then been extremely fortunate of the major league opportunities the Giants have provided me with the some regular season games and 12 years of spring training on their web doing spring games. So I've been very fortunate.
Wow, that's amazing. Now I have to ask you honestly, Doug, because you've done a lot of California and Texas and some areas like that. I mean, I understand it's May, but it's a little cold in Winnipeg still in May. So are we ready to be calling some games where it might be like 35 degrees?
Well, that's all people tell me so far. Doug, bundle up. You know what? I'm one of these old school guys where, and I pardon my sarcasm here, but I do own a coat, a heavy coat, and I do own gloves, and I do keep the window open during the game unless it's really really windy and they're blowing papers all over. That may be a little different, but you know, as they say, As May rolls along, it'll be June, and in June it gets warm. So, anyway, that's I'm not as worried about that.
I like that you're one of our kind of guys. We've always been an advocate of having the windows open in the press box unless it's really bad out, because you just feel more part of the game when you're feeling the elements just like the players are.
Well, you know, over the years, players joke with me. Like, for example, in Fresno, it gets so hot. I mean, there's no way around it. I mean, Fresno, it's, you know, once you get into, sometimes in May, you'll get teased with a 95-degree day, and they'll go back down to 75. But once you hit June, July, August, early September, it's just oppressively hot. I mean, we're talking mid-90s to, or, sorry, well, 90s to, you know, 105, and players will say, "Yeah, well, it must be nice having that air conditioning," and I'll say, "Well, it is. But once the game starts, that window's open, guys, let me tell you."
I'm curious, Doug, when you were in Shreveport, did you come across Dave Nitz, who broadcast for Sioux City Explorers, but he was with Shreveport for a couple of years, he told me he was down there. That name ring a bell to you?
I follow Dave to Shreveport, so yes, obviously I got to know Dave, and of course he's really you know, not only his time with the Captains, but all the 45 years or whatever it was. I'd see him certainly at a lot of Louisiana Tech events. But yeah, I follow Dave to Shreveport.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Were there besides your dad, obviously, that's a great mentor to be following there, but were there other broadcasters that you tried to style yourself after?
You know, I don't know. I mean, there's guys that I certainly looked up to, but style, tough to say style. I mean, because you try not to emulate someone. Sometimes it's unavoidable. A lot of people say I'm a carbon copy to my dad in terms of voice, and I'll agree with that. I think a lot of kids, regardless whatever line of work their family's in, do share an inflection or a similarity. But obviously through my dad, I got to meet so many broadcasters, mostly National League broadcasters. That was before what I call the evil invention of interleague play. But I got to certainly know over the years, I got to know the Brennemans and then Bob Murphy and Gary Cohen and, you know, Harry Carey, and I definitely got to meet Vin Scully. I mean, that was, well, what more can you say? And then through my dad, you know, just obviously all the Giants folks and I first got to meet, you know, the guys like, you know, the Giants crew, back in the day, you know, John Miller followed my dad to San Francisco, and then going back to Kruko and Kuiper, back to the days of the mid 80s, early 90s, and just being in San Francisco, certainly getting to know, you know, currently Dave Fleming and that whole crew, being around all those guys. But in terms of, you know, style, I didn't quite mean to digress that far to who I've met, but style, you know, I think it's just one of those where you develop it on your own. You can learn it from certain guys, learn the art, but eventually as you go on, I think you become yourself, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Now, I think you're about to become Kevin and my favorite broadcaster, because it sounds like you're sort of against some of these changes that they're making in Major League Baseball and at some of the levels out there. Are you liking things like pitch clocks and not allowing shifts and things like that?
I'm actually in Florida right now catching some Florida spring training. So it's the first time I've been at a major league game where I've gotten to see the, and as a fan, you know, I got to say, and I never thought I'd say this, I'm okay with it as a fan. As a broadcaster, no. And why? Because I don't have time for stories. So much of broadcasting is storytelling. You know, doing interviews, or maybe a mid-game interview, you know, with a partner, you know, talking strategy, even trying to get in a promo. You know, hey, the Winnipeg Gold Eyes next homestand, July, whatever. Oh, wait a minute, I just missed a pitch. Yeah, it's like, yep. So now, I believe the rules are a little different, though, from what I've been told in the American Association. They are going to do pitch clock. I don't think they're doing... I don't think they're necessarily banning shifts, unless something changes.
No, they're not.
Okay, and I believe there is no ghost runner.
Right.
Okay.
I think there is for extra innings, yes.
Oh, there would be
a
ghost
yeah,
runner for the association?
Yes. Yeah, my apologies.
Oh, okay.
Yes, my apologies.
All right.
Yeah, they added that in this last year, yes.
Okay. All right, that part I didn't know. Because I feel that if you're a partner league of MLB, then everything should be consistent. That's my take on it. But as a fan, I hate to say it, and I'm as traditionalist as you get, something had to be done to make the games a little quicker. It's too much time between pitches, and even as a broadcaster, I know what I just said, it's important to get stories in, but there are times where after a while, six straight throws over to first base, like, come on, let's go. So I'm okay with it. The bigger bases, I guess that's going to help with cut down on injuries or maybe give guys a little bit of an edge stealing a base. I don't really think that's going to factor a whole lot. I'm not really paying a whole lot of attention to. The main one, though, is really the pitch clock, because this game is about getting people to the ballpark, and how often you see people leaving the seventh inning because you're already, not already, but you're, you know, 3 hours in by then. And I can't say I blame a lot of folks on that. So the Ghost Runner I'm not as big a fan of, and I say that because, really, how often do you go extra innings anyway? I mean, you don't. You know, that's not a common thing. So I'm kind of hit and miss on a few of them. Yes to some and no to others.
Did you notice watching the games, as a fan watching the games, did the games seem faster? I know I covered a lot of St. Paul Saints games last year, and they had the pitch clock there. And frankly, to me, I think you just become immune to it after a while. You don't even think that it's there because they're just used to doing it.
I mean, I think right now what they're doing in spring training is fabulous for a lot of reasons. Let the hiccups get out of the way now. Let players complain now and get used to it. I mean, it's spring training for everybody. It's spring training for the clock operator, for the broadcasters, for the umpires who have to enforce all this. And as a fan, and I've been at some of these games in Florida, thinking, wow, five innings already done in an hour and change? I think fans are going to like that. And again, I'm the most old school guy, but I can't believe I'm actually saying this. And I was going to say about the Ghost Runner, I can understand it for the minor leagues. Major leagues, though, I really feel that it should be played out a little more naturally.
So Doug, being a Bay Area guy, it sounds like, who are some players that you really kind of grew up following and maybe even got to know pretty well?
Well, I think it's mostly the Giants players of the 80s and early 90s. And I go back to the two guys who my dad helped mentor in the broadcasting, Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko. Go back to Vida Blue and Jack Clark and Will Clark and Robbie Thompson and Matt Williams and so many other. I know I'm leaving a ton of guys out. Dan Gladden, who you certainly know with the Twins. Dan was always a favorite. Just saw Dan last week in Fort Myers. So, there's lots and lots of guys, but it was pretty much, you know, my whole youth was Giants. It was orange and black, so I was really getting to know guys of that era.
When you look around the game now, beyond the rules and things, do you like the way that the game is developing, especially with the way that they're applying, you know, all these stats and, you know, wins against replacement and all those kind of things?
Could care less about all of that, to be honest with you. What's it really matter? What's it mean? You know, I mean, that's one of these, you know, new wave things within the last 10 years, if even that far back. I always felt that's not relevant to a broadcaster or to somebody who's doing play-by-play. I think what's relevant is, how is this guy hitting against this pitcher all time? Or how's he done against this guy this year? Or I'm okay with splits. This guy's a much better left-handed hitter than he is a right-handed hitter. Some of the stuff is okay. You know, why does this guy hit 308 at night and 202 during the day? I mean, I'm okay with that. But, you know, war to me, I don't even know what that really means, nor do I care. And the bottom line is, what we do for a living is sell baseball, sell a good time at the ballpark, get fans to listen. If you're a fan and you're listening in your car or at home or wherever you're listening, you got to ask yourself, do I really care what all these launch angle? Well, that was an 80% launch angle. Well, that's great. I'm glad you were good in geometry. I mean, that's my take on all that.
You do keep winning points with Rob and I because we're old school the same way.
I'm glad you were good. I say you. I don't mean you too personally, but a fan of geometry. I'm glad you were good in geometry because I wasn't. That's why I'm doing this.
I love it. Absolutely love it. So, now that we know that you're not going to be jumping out with launch angles and some of that during your broadcast, what's a Doug Greenwald broadcast look like? What do you try to focus on during the game?
I love the history of the game. I love being able to say, well, so-and-so, former Goldeye, is doing this or that. Or I guess I will have to cater it a little more now that my target audience is Canadian and maybe talk a little more about the Blue Jays. Certainly an organization I don't know a lot about, or talk about guys who are playing wherever, who are Canadian. But I think in general, I like the bounce area. One of the that's a good question because one of the things I tell broadcast students or the great thing about baseball, pitch clock aside for a moment, it's not a clock-controlled sport. I mean, the pitcher can't kneel on the ball. He's got to do something with it. You can't dribble the ball out. You know, you can't ice the baseball. You got to do something with it. And the great thing is I don't know what I'm going to see in a baseball game from night to night. I mean, you know that in football that, you know, Pat Mahomes is going to throw for 300 yards a game. He's not, you know, or Steph Curry is going to go for, you know, 35 a game. And those guys are going to be in there in crunch time. What I love about baseball is come the eighth or ninth inning, your best player might not even factor in that inning. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, you know, Trey Turner, so forth. Well, I guess Turner did the other night. But, I mean, sometimes your best guys aren't going to be factoring in the game when you need the most, whereas other sports, I don't imagine the Chiefs are going to pull Mahomes because he's throwing too many passes, you know, in the fourth quarter. I mean, baseball's different. So the Doug Greenwald broadcast means, when I get back to that question, is I call it a blank canvas. That's what you're going to get because I don't know what I'm going to get.
That's very interesting. Are there some personal highlights for you during your career that have really stood out for you?
No, I'll just go back to your question. Generally, I like to talk about player human interest stories. That's the one thing that I really focus on because our job as a broadcaster, one of our jobs, is we're the go-between for the fan and the player because the fans don't really get to know the players like we do. So we're the storyteller. I like to tell human interest stories about guys. You know, say, hey, so-and-so playing for Sioux Falls or Sioux City tonight. First time they've ever stepped foot in Canada. And so-and-so is really excited to go fishing up in Manitoba, up in the lakes tomorrow. So-and-so, you know, their grandparents introduced them to baseball, even though their grandparents, you know, came over from Europe 80 years ago. It's things like that. That's what you get out of a Doug Greenwald broadcast. Every broadcaster is going to describe the action. That's our job. Every broadcaster is going to go over the ticket promos and the fireworks nights. That's our job. But after that, it just depends. And I really like, okay, you know, I see a guy that might have been born in Cuba. Well, how long did he live in Cuba? I might go meet him, and he might say, well, he came over when he was 7 years old by boat. They might have an interesting story behind it. Because every player's got a story behind it, and I like to bring that out a little bit. So that's really something that is out of a Doug Greenwald broadcast that I like to incorporate. Now go back to your most recent question because I already forgot it.
were there personal highlights for you that have really kind of stood out in your career?
Well, I mean, aside from opportunity to broadcast major league games, I mean, yeah, but I would say when the Grizzlies won the Pacific Coast League Championship in 2015, that was exciting. It was a nail-biting best-of-five series. It went all five against Round Rock, and the Grizzlies had to win the last two games to win it. That definitely stands out. I mean, it's tough to say in 25 years. But I think a lot of it had to do with, I mean, 20 years in Fresno. I remember Tim Lincecum come on his way up, blew through Fresno in six games in 2007, went on and won three World Series with the Giants, and then in 2016, he's pitching AAA for the Angels, and one of the games he pitches for Salt Lake happened to be in Fresno. And all I remember that night was on a Sunday night in June when it was about 100 degrees. Normally, meaning the Grizzlies, would be lucky to get 2,000 people there. It was a legit packed 10,000-plus. And it was a 1-0 Fresno win. And Brady Rogers was had a little big league time with Houston, was a prospect with the Astros. He and Lincecum were matching 0-for-0. And here's a guy in Lincecum that had, you know, what, won two Cy Youngs and three World Championships and was obviously, you know, in his heyday, arguably the best in the game. and yet was trying to rejuvenate his career with another organization, and just so happened that one of the places he pitches in AAA to try to get back to the big leagues was a place that he came through 9 years earlier. And I remember the game in 2016, Lentz had come pitch in Fresno, and I remember his last game as a Grizzly, where he set the all-time Fresno single-game record for most strikeouts with 14, and boom, he was gone right after that. And there he was, as I said, those 9 years flew by. So that was, I definitely remember that. I mean, the Buster Posey moments, the moments that Carlos Correa had, although there weren't that many for Correa in a Fresno uniform, understandably. I won't, you know, necessarily, it's tough to, you know, remember certain, you know, all these games, you know, a few stand out. But I think it's more about the players, because Fresno's had a lot of them. You know, it's just, it's, I remember Ben Sheets when he was with Stockton, you know, coming up and as a number one pick. I mean, so there, I mean, there's, I won't say there's highlights, but those are, you know, player moments you remember.
I was curious, in following St. Paul, as they've turned it into a AAA team, the thing I've found is there's a lot of guys that come and go and really don't have an established 25-man roster. And what you describe in telling the player stories, is it a little more difficult when you've got a team where guys are constantly coming and going to really develop a rapport with the players and get their stories?
You know, yes and no. I mean, some guys are there for all season or go back and forth. And I think the tough part is, and people ask me about, you know, what it was like broadcasting AAA. And people will ask, well, Doug, how's the team going to be? And my response is, well, define team at AAA. There's a different roster every day. But, no, I think it's a little easier, actually, because by the time they get to AAA, just about the entire story is there, just about. I mean, obviously, they haven't finished it yet because that's the next step for a player to the big leagues. But, you know, by then, they've already had usually 4 or 5 years of pro experience, and those who go to college have a story from that. Maybe they played in the College World Series. Maybe they had a parent who played in the game. So, no, I mean, even though players come and go, I mean, I think by then the stories are, you find a lot more to talk about than, let's say, the last 2 years in Fresno when the team got demoted to single A, because there everybody's new professional.
Now, you mentioned that you were broadcasting in Indy Ball early on, so I understand that the game has changed a great deal, but now Partner League Baseball. What are your thoughts on independent baseball or partner league baseball and how it's developed over the years?
I think it's been very valuable. I mean, there's a lot of guys that get second chances. And I define second chances as guys who've been in the big leagues. I mean, look at last year. You had Matt Adams, Pete Cosma, you know, play at Kansas City. You know, I'm trying to think who else in the league played in the big leagues. But you know, you have guys like that. Maybe guys that weren't drafted, but now you have partner leagues and you have less rounds in the draft. So, you know, teams might say, look, normally we take you in the 25th round, but we connect now with Winnipeg. We connect now with York. We connect now with Evansville, and we'll keep tabs on you. I think it's very valuable. So, you know, when they came back many years ago, I think there's been a great renaissance there. And obviously for fans, I mean, it's provided other opportunities for, you know, you might lose an organized team, affiliated team, but you still have professional baseball. So I think it's been very valuable, and you can use it. That's a question I asked Max Murphy, you know, who, you know, the player of the year last year in the American Association. I said to Max, you know, what do you tell a young player who might have been cut by his affiliate and that, who knows? You know, he might not ever get back into organized ball. What do you tell him? He says, hey, these leagues are good because you can still be noticed by Japan or by Korea or Mexico and still make a good chunk of money playing foreign baseball. So, you know, that's, I think it's really a win-win for a lot. You know, and I think it's, as I say, it's helped, you know, broadcasters. It's, but no, I mean, I think it's very valuable because there's still a lot of talent in those leagues, in the partner leagues, and it's good that Major League Baseball has included York, or, I'm sorry, the Atlantic League in places like York or Lexington or whatever. I mean, all the teams. So, yeah, I think it places a lot of value, and the emphasis is MLB Partner League. We did a conference call a few days ago with the all the teams of the American Association, and that's the thing we need to emphasize, is that don't call it independent now, because we are a partner. We do have, you see the, logo, the MLB logo, the guy swinging the bat, and right under it, there's all the logos of all the Atlantic League and American Association and so forth.
Now, Doug, with you there in Winnipeg, are we going to get some, you're going to give us some good hockey analysis now that you're a Canadian up there enjoying Winnipeg Jet hockey?
I've heard hockey's popular in Canada. Someone told me that.
Yeah, a little bit.
I love going to hockey games, especially minor league hockey games. I love the old school barn, and some play in the big corporate arena, sure, but, you know, the old school barns. And I like going to hockey, but I don't really know much about hockey in terms of the rules or, you know, I couldn't name one Winnipeg Jet. I know that sounds bad, but I do hope that the Jets have a chance to make the playoffs, and I do hope by the time I get up there in mid-April they'll be in the playoffs, because I definitely want to check out a game.
They're right on the verge of it. They're kind of teetering around that last wild card spot right now.
That's what I've heard.
Well, Doug, that's fantastic. We really appreciate you joining us tonight. But since you're a first-time guest, we got to tell you that we allow our guests here to give us a final thought to take out the show here tonight. So whatever you'd like to talk about, the floor is yours.
Well, you know, it's, I guess, foreshadowing. And, you know, the last season during the Fresno All-Star break, what I like to do is go and see other ballparks, other games. And since Major League Baseball, you know, realigned the minor leagues, now every minor league team has the same All-Star break. So it used to be if I was in the PCL during an All-Star break, I'd go and catch a few Sally League games or a Carolina League game, and I could kick back with a soda and a hot dog in the stands and, you know, a nice muggy night and talk to the people next to me. And it was a nice, you know, for a few days to do that. Well, the partner leagues have different All-Star breaks, and the American Association was one of them. So last year, lo and behold, I went to go see five American Association games, including Winnipeg playing at Chicago. And, you know, I was getting to catch up with my predecessor, Steve Schuster. And I want to give certainly Steve a shout-out, because he certainly helped get the ball rolling with my appointment in Winnipeg, and definitely, you know, congratulate Steve for 9 great years of the Gold Eyes and all the years in the association with the Wingnuts of Wichita as well, and I wish him well with his new job involving analytics in the Mets minor league system. But I was able to catch up with Steve last year, and who would have thought that as we were talking after that game on a Wednesday afternoon in Chicago that I'd be following him to Winnipeg about 8 months later. So now my thoughts are excited to get to see some people I met last year and meet a lot of new folks and become a member of the Canadian community starting in a few months. That'll be definitely a change. So they told me that Steve had been the only American on staff, and well, just when they thought that they could be back to all Canadians on staff, that I come along. So, but no, I'm very fortunate and excited to get going.
That's fantastic. Doug Greenwald, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
Look forward to seeing you during the season. Thank you.
Well, Kevin, great having Doug Greenwald on. And, man, you know, hard to replace a guy like Steve Schuster, but it sure looks like Winnipeg did their homework and found the right guy.
It's going to be interesting, I think, because, you know, as we were we were talking to him, and he didn't seem all that interested in launch angles and war and all those advanced analytics. And that's going to be a bit of a departure, because we know that that was a big part of the broadcast for Steve Schuster. So it's going to, it'll be interesting. It'll be, you know, they're both good styles, but it'll be interesting to see how that takes off in Winnipeg. I don't think there'll be an issue. I think he's going to do just fine up there. He seems like he's a true pro, and I think the fans are going to really like him.
I'm in complete agreement with you. I think Doug sounds like he's a guy that's going to bring a lot of just knowledge and experience and excitement about the game, a person who's really going to invite fans in to learn about the players on this club. And, you know, I think, Kevin, and I'm making an assumption here, so I'm not trying to speak on behalf of Winnipeg Gold Eyes fans, but, you know, for a year and a half, this team didn't even play at home. And I'm sure it's probably taking fans a little bit to you know, get to know this club again a little bit. You're going to have a new manager this year and a lot, you know, a lot of kind of turnover. And it sounds like he's the right guy to get fans to get to know who the Winnipeg Gold Eyes are once again. I think that's kind of a big benefit for them.
It will be. And like you said, it's going to be a year of adjustment with Greg Taggart coming in. And looks like it's going to be a different looking Gold Eyes ball club, but I think it'll be a fun year. And, you know, yeah, like you said, maybe that's going to be something that's going to get some people out to the ballpark that are going to be interested in seeing this different looking Gold Eyes product.
Yeah, if you're a Gold Eyes fan out there, definitely going to want to be listening on Doug's broadcast, because he sounds like he's going to bring some excitement to the team for sure. Not taking anything away from Steve. Steve's fantastic, but you know, you're a seasoned professional like this guy. You can't, man, made a right choice. You got to be honest with you. Let's see, Kevin, let's talk a little bit about what's going on around American Association Baseball. And we're going to start in Milwaukee, because they had probably the two biggest moves of the week. Ben Holmes had his contract purchased by the Chicago White Sox, so congratulations to him for returning. And then today, Kevin, Keon Barnum headed to New Jersey. That's a pretty big deal.
I think so. You know, as much as we're looking forward to seeing that combination of Keon Barnum and Drew Ward in the same lineup, I guess we will not be seeing that as a deal was made with the New Jersey Jackals, and Keon Barnum is moving on.
Yeah, Keon, I'm looking to take advantage of some other opportunities, including getting the coach out there in the Frontier League this year. So congratulations to him. And I'm hearing Milwaukee got quite the reliever in return, and Hansel Rodriguez, who's a quality right-hander, is going to give them some excellent performance out of the bullpen. So we know that's a big part of what Anthony Barone wants to do, is have that solid bullpen out there. So another live arm to that group that's going to be quite impressive for sure.
I think we've got to talk about a couple retirements, too.
I'm sorry?
I think we have to talk about a couple retirements with the Milkmen also.
Yes, we do. So let's throw those out there at me, Kevin.
Well, first one is Miles Smith, a guy we've had on the show before, and one of our favorites has retired from professional baseball. And the other was a guy that, you know, we've always enjoyed watching play. And, you know, he just never had that healthy season last year. We were hoping that we were going to see him back in 2023. But Mason Davis has also chosen to retire. And, you know, I'd like to wish him both the best on whatever line of work they try to pursue in the future. Hopefully they'll stay in baseball in some form or fashion, but if not, we wish them all the best.
Absolutely. As Kevin said, I could not agree more about it. We love Miles, had him on the show, got to talk to him at the All-Star break there a little bit for a while, and fantastic guy. Mason Davis, a guy that we admired for his days with the Kansas City T-Bones. I think he originally began as a T-Bone, but injuries just kind of plagued him, unfortunately. So two big gaps to fill there for those Milwaukee Milkmen besides Keon Barnum. So it should be interesting to see what manager Anthony Barone pulls off. And I think the big advantage to him right now, Kevin, is Keon Barnum was a vet, probably the highest paid player on the team last year. They had Logan Trowbridge, who would have been close to vet status. I'm not sure if as many years he had, if that meant he was a vet or not. But he was probably making a good amount of money too. Miles Smith had won the Pitcher of the Year from the American Association the year before, so it looks like he got a lot of room under the cap, salary cap, to all of a sudden play with here.
Yeah, it's very possible, and you know, it's hard to say without being in the middle of it. Who knows what he's? Because I know he does have some guys coming back, and I'm sure those guys will probably be making a little more too. But you're right. Losing those four salaries will open up some doors for him to bring in some named players.
Going back to the Winnipeg Gold Eyes, since we had Doug on here, they have four big signings this week. Right-handed pitcher Marc-Andre Hebec, I'm believing that is the way that it's said. They also signed infielder Chris Burgess, left-handed pitcher R.J. Martinez, and infielder Keith Torres. Martinez did pitch for the team last season, so three additions and one re-signing. Lake Country signs right-handed pitcher Mike Schwerin, I think of the way that is said. I think that was it for them. Lincoln, we had Cam Touche coming to the club. He's officially signed, as well as Josh Roeder is signed by the team. The Sioux Falls Canaries had acquired Hunter Clannon. He was officially signed by the team this week as well. Casey Hobson, Kevin traded out there to the Atlantic League, and I told Kevin, I guess sons are having a wanting to move on from their fathers this week, because we saw TJ Bennett go out to the Atlantic League, but I still think, Kevin, there's some kind of belief out there that the Atlantic League is better, or maybe there's just a better opportunity to make more money out there or something. So, but Casey Hobson, you know, he was successful in the Atlantic League before, and he'll probably be successful there again.
Well, I wonder, too, if a longer regular season is more of a draw, too, that you're playing more, which means, obviously, you're probably making a little more money also.
Yeah, I think that is an astute observation by you. Outfielder Nick Heath signs with Chicago as well. They also sign right-handed pitcher Aiden McIntyre, and Jonathan Tripp returns to the club. They also acquire outfielder Jesus, I believe this is going to be Lujano, would be the way that is said, from Tri-City in the Frontier League. And let's see what else we got here. We got, I think, one other player. Kansas City re-signed right-handed pitcher Jalen Miller, and they signed right-handed pitcher Grant Gavin. And that is our moves around the American Association. So slowing down a little bit here, I think we are about 9 or 10 days away from major league clubs having to cut a bunch of their teams and settle on their minor league rosters. So probably in another 2 weeks, we're going to see some crazy signings if the releases happen the way that we were told they were supposed to happen a few years ago.
Yes, I hope so. I mean, that's something I think you and I have both been waiting for, is when are the floodgates going to open up, and when is it going to be more like it was pre-COVID with players being available?
I hope that winds up being the case. There's a lot of managers who are seconding that opinion, I'm sure. Let's jump out there into the Frontier League. Besides Keon Barnum hitting out there, a few guys from American Association passed, also getting signed this past week. That included, I believe, Juan Mateo, right-handed pitcher signed with Empire State, joins the club. As we also have, let me see, there was one other one, I think. Gabriel Ortiz, the catcher, played a little bit in the American Association. He signs with Empire State as well. And one other move here that I did want to talk to us about is a promotional schedule out there for the Washington Wild Things. And this one just kind of caught my attention, Kevin, was it's single and mingle night on the night the Joliet Slammers are there. I thought it was kind of an interesting night to choose that, Slammers and mingle and single. I don't know. That just sounded weird. So, just throwing it out, Kevin. What's the best promotion you ever thought, Kevin? Exactly. Give me your best promotion ever, Kevin. What was your favorite promotion? Our favorite few.
Oh boy, that's a tough one to. You know, and it's a basic one, but it's one of the first ones I ever encountered as a independent baseball fan. But I was always a little partial to when the Blues Brothers would make an appearance. I remember being thoroughly entertained by that when they showed up at Midway Stadium in 1993. Some other ones. I got to be partial for any promotion that involves The Office, because there has been so many good ones out there. And even though it really wasn't per se an Office theme night day, I can remember the St. Paul Saints in like 2016 used characters of The Office as the player photos for the opposing team. I was thoroughly amused by that one, and I'm sure there's plenty of others, none of which I can think of right now, because my brain's just not operating that way. Once we get done with the show, I'll probably have dozens that I would have covered.
I think Sioux Falls had a Office night last year. Did you ever make it out to that one?
I did not. The one they had, I did. The bobblehead was Prison Mike, which was one of Michael Scott's characters was in the show, and I did end up getting a bobblehead from Sioux Falls on that, so that was a nice addition to the overflowing bobblehead collection. And yeah, being a bobblehead junkie too, I've always been partial to bobblehead nights also. Bobble election when St. Paul had them in, I think the first one was probably 2004. I mean, when that first happened, I didn't know what to expect when I got to the ballpark, but it was very serious. There was like a lot of political groups out there campaigning, because it was an election year. And I just had no idea how much that was going to be a serious thing, but the Saints did add a lot of fun aspects to it, and all the subsequent bob election nights they had were well executed. And jumping from that to another story, the Saints were sold last week to Diamond Baseball Holdings. Well, the Gold Coin Group had bob elections all throughout the teams that they owned, and would kind of add up the tallies and have like the points from each bob election, and then they would figure out who won the election as far as all the teams in the Gold Coin Group. So don't know if that's going to carry on in 2024 now with the Saints no longer being a part of the Gold Coin Group. But like I said, those nights were also very entertaining. And another one I thought, wasn't really like per se, super entertaining with the execution, but one that I think kind of mirrors the whole thing with the rainbow jersey kerfuffle we've seen in the last month with NHL teams and players wishing not to wear them, was when St. Paul had a big atheist convention in town. They bought out a ton of tickets at Midway Stadium, and they had St. Paul Ains night, where the players wore jerseys that said Ains. And I believe it was, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it was Henry Wrigley that just flat out said, "Hey, I can't play with this jersey on. Just take me out of the lineup that night." And the manager obliged, and Henry Wrigley didn't play that night. But I bet he's not facing the same persecution right now that James Reimer and Ivan Provorov have with the rainbow jerseys. But that's just me kind of getting off topic there. So, but yeah, those are some of the promotions that I've seen in the past that have stood out to me.
And I think that's always one of the funnest parts about going out to the game during the season. We go out and cover games for, what's going on the field and things like that. But it is how the fans are enjoying the entertainment, because, we want to see good crowds though, too. I think Kevin and I have talked over the years about pushing the idea. We want to see good attendance at all of these games here. So it's good for the clubs. It's good for the league as a whole. And, it's good fun entertainment. So those promotions are always good. So,
and, we'll be watching. In all these years, sometimes there'll be a promotion here or there. When you see it on the promotional schedule, you'll be thinking, that's kind of a throwaway night. But then when you see the execution done, you go home that night being pleasant surprised, like, wow, that was a really fun night. You know, I guess another one, you know, now that I'm got the brain rattled a little bit here, was I can remember the St. Paul Saints, like their second year, had a night where they had a helicopter fly over the field. I think it was a Christmas promotion, and dropped all kinds of stuff where people could run on the field and get prizes like concert tickets and other neat little things. So you just never know what you're going to get. Like I said, sometimes the anonymous promotions actually turn out to be some of the better ones, and some of the ones that you think are going to be really good kind of turn into popcorn farts. So there's my take.
And we learned a new term tonight here, too, so that's good. Out of the Atlantic League, we want to mention Ian McKinney, who was with the Sioux City Explorers back in 2018, named as the new pitching coach for the Gastonia Honey Hunters. Man, I can't talk right now all of a sudden. So congratulations to Ian. He had just 1 year in Sioux City, was very successful for manager Steve Montgomery that year, but now moving on to the next phase of his career, so good for him. I think otherwise there was not a lot of former American Association action in the Atlantic League, and I'm looking through one more time just to make sure. No. So Kyle Lobstein was the last thing we talked about, and that was last week. Okay, so, yeah, so nothing going on through there. They're getting ready because I believe that they are April 20th or 21st is the start of the Atlantic season, so about a month away from them getting underway there as well. So baseball's getting close, Kevin. We've got Major League Baseball probably about 10 days away, and man, that's going to get back to the time of year we love.
Snow's finally starting to melt up here, so it's an encouraging sign.
Kevin might see grass one of these days. Green grass at some point soon. Well, Kevin, so we're going to be heading into the coming season. Or does that mean Kevin Lukos, last year you did a great review of the St. Paul Saints organization over the last 30 years. And do we have a plan for something like that for this year?
You know, I really don't have anything in the hopper right now. Honestly, with my Saints coverage, unless I find a spark, of which I really haven't been able to the last couple of years, frankly, I'm going to be honest here, doing the 30 years of Saints baseball pretty much covered for really not being able to sink my teeth into the AAA product last year. You know, I'm not a quitter. I'm not going to quit on the organization, but I'll try to sink my teeth into this year's product. You know, maybe I'll find an angle somewhere that will be unique, but I just don't want to be one of the gazillions of people that are going to write about, oh, who's going to be the hottest prospect to go up from the Saints to the Twins? You know what? Between the internet and all these blogs, enough's being written about that. So if I can't find an angle that's going to be original, then really I don't know. Honestly, Rob, I don't know what I'm going to do as far as coverage with that. But, you know, the gimmick I do have that has been copied, mind you, but I like to think the best and most comprehensive power rankings can be found on the 10th inning stretch blog, and I will be bringing that back this year too. So, and maybe news notes here and there kind of within the blog. So the formula has worked, and I believe I'll stick with it.
I'm loving it. The Minor League Sports Report, just providing stuff that's going on around the American Association. This last weekend, for those who hadn't seen already, I did a little review of the six managers in both the West and East divisions, just talking about their credentials so people could argue about who they think is the best manager in the league. I will honestly say that I was going to originally write that as who I thought was a top three manager group from the American Association, but I was having a real hard time narrowing it down to three. So I decided I'm going to take an entirely different track with this thing and just run out here with who should be qualified. So I mean, what qualifications are for everybody. And, you know, kind of looking through that, and no disrespect to those East Division managers, but the West has a little bit deeper resumes than the East, I have to honestly say. And that's because, you know, guys like Lamar Rodgers and some of those are just, you know, Logan Watkins are young in their managerial career. They've proven a lot. They've been very successful so far, but, you know, they just don't have 1,000 victories, you know, kind of thing in their back pocket. So, but is Kevin Lukel going to go out on a limb for me and give me the top three managers, or should we just ignore that and go on?
You know, when you came out with that, I thought of the Jack Michaels line right away, you know, when we asked him about something, and he said, that's kind of like asking me which daughter I love the most.
Exactly. Exactly right. So, that is the way I looked at it. That's where I came down to, because I thought, man, some of these guys who do not have as impressive credentials, you know, because they're just young managers at this. Lamar Rodgers and Logan Watkins, both of us really came to like a lot, you know, think, man, these guys are really good at what they're doing here. But do you put them in the same category as a George Samus or a Greg Taggart or a Butch Hobson, who have over, you know, 1,100, almost 1,200, actually over 1,200 for all three of them now in terms of victories, or a Joe Calfapietra has got over 1,000 victories. But, I mean, you could, you know, it's a tough call. So I left it alone. I chickened out. I'm going to overly admit it. So there you go.
You got to keep in mind that, you know, at one time, Joe Calfapietra and George Samus and trying to think of Butch Hobson, once upon a time, they were that young manager that was just trying to establish herself, too. So it's kind of hard to make comparisons because you just don't really know what the end product's going to be without letting everything play out.
You know, and I think something that has to be considered, too, is when talking about the job a manager is doing, and first of all of these guys have earned a great deal of respect from me because, you know, they all have, whether it's Logan Watkins with, you know, 60 or 70 victories in his career, or Butch Hobson with over 2,300 all time in compared to minors, major league and partner league baseball. They have more victories than I will ever have. Okay. So let's just start with that. But I also look at this, too, is that there are some spots in the American Association that are a little easier to win in, I think, than, let's say, Sioux Falls. You know, I mean, I have to pat Mike Meyer on the back because I think to myself, if I'm a pitcher, Sioux Falls is not first on my list of spots I'd like to go to. And I know I'm, you know, a bad windstorm one night, and all of a sudden it's a three-home-run night you had for given up. And so that he's able to lure some of the guys that he's, you know, gotten to come there to Sioux Falls and pitch for him, you know, I think is an outstanding job on that side, you know. And again, that's not to take anything away from other managers, but I think sometimes, you know, we don't consider the fact that some of these managerial jobs are just not easy.
Yeah, and you just kind of wonder sometimes if you switch positions and if Mike Meyer's managing in Fargo and Chris Coast is managing in Sioux Falls, what would change? Would the results be different?
Yeah, so that's a very good way to put it. You know, put Mike Meyer in Kansas City or Chicago or something like that, and he might have an entirely different story. Now take, you know, Butch Hobson, I think, would be success. I don't, you know, stick him in anywhere, and he's going to have success because he's proven that over, you know, 25 years, 30 years now, I think we're talking about. The guy has constantly come up with ways to win, but, you know, put George Samus has been a guy that's proven that he can win wherever he goes, and he won in two different stadiums in St. Paul. So you got to credit that. Done very well at King County, done very well in New Jersey. So when you see a guy move around, you go, well, yeah, I get that. Greg Taggart, you know, I have a lot of respect for because he's been able to win when ownership allowed him to get whatever players he wanted, and he was figuring out a way to win when there was a limitation on what he could spend. And he still figured out a way to win. And I'm like, well, okay. So now we're going to see what it looks like when he's in one of the premier partner league baseball franchises in you know, all of baseball. So see how that goes for him.
And there's going to be lot more pressure on him in Winnipeg than he ever had in Gary also.
That's very true, too. Because that franchise, I'm sure, is dying to get back to not just making the playoffs, but believing that they're going to win championships again. And, you know, a six-year drought doesn't seem like a big deal, but Winnipeg Gold Eyes fans are not, they've been spoiled. They, you know, it's like Fargo. They expect to win, and they have been rewarded that way. So a lot of pressure on Greg Taggart, you got to believe. Well, Kevin, that takes us to the best part of the show, the Kevin Lukow final thoughts.
Well, I was going to go the controversial route, but I think I kind of touched upon that with the whole Pride Night issue and the Atheist Night stuff and the comparison there. So we'll leave that one alone. But, you know, I just came up with something as you were talking about this managerial thing. And there's a lot of history in independent baseball, 30 years worth. You know, we're talking Hall of Fames now, and we've got enough guys that were famous playing in the league that there are a lot of players that fans are going to remember regardless of what market they played in. Let me throw this one out. Maybe you just make it like a celebrity softball game, except your celebrities will be former players. How about at the All-Star game, we have a softball game between former American Association and Northern League star baseball players, a chance for them to reconnect with the fans that follow them. And, you know, when you got two teams, you need two managers. And we're just talking about managers here. Well, maybe it's time you and I get to try to match wits, and we will take on the managerial roles for both teams, and we'll see who can coach their team of independent baseball legends to victory. What do you think?
I think that is a great idea, and nobody will ever listen to it, but I love that idea. I think that would be so much fun, and they should have us both mic, because you know we'll be talking trash to each other the whole time, and we'll keep it clean, though. We'll say that. But I love
that. Well, I don't know. I mean, I could go off on an umpire, too. So, you could try to keep it somewhat clean.
I'm liking it. I'm liking that a lot. Well, we want to thank Doug Greenwald for joining us this week. Next week, Kevin and I will return to give you some. I don't have our guest list next week, but we'll have somebody awesome for you next week as well. So for Kevin Lukow, I'm Rob Pernier. We'll see you next time on This Week in the Association.